I was reading that SageMind article this morning, the new one on embodied cognition, and it poses this question that's frankly a little uncomfortable. I mean, we're sitting here in 2026. We've mapped the brain down to the neuron. We have AI that can write a film script in, what, seconds? And yet, when it comes to the actual experience of consciousness, that feeling of being you, we're arguably no closer than we were 100 years ago.
It's a hard problem, isn't it? It just refuses to go away. We've become, masters of the hardware, but the software, the ghost in the machine, is still totally elusive.
We just keep looking for it in the brain tissue and coming up empty. Which brings us to today. We are looking at a stack of research around a book from 1896, Henri Bergson's Matter and Memory.
A little ways back, yeah.
Usually when we dig up philosophy that old, it's to see how wrong they were. But this Sage Mind piece argues Bergson actually got it right, and we've been on the wrong path for a century.
That is the headline. The whole premise we're exploring is that the brain is not a container. It's not a hard drive. It's not a camera.
Which is a massive claim. The brain as a computer is basically the default setting for how we talk about ourselves.
It is.
So we've got the original text, the Stanford Encyclopedia entry to keep us honest, and we're using that SageMind summary to really anchor this in today. Our mission: dismantle the two biggest metaphors for the mind, the camera and the hard drive.
And replace them with Bergson's idea, the body as a center of action.
Okay, before we get into the mechanics, and I really want to get to this cone of memory thing, we should talk about Bergson himself. He wasn't just some, armchair philosopher.
No, and that's so important. He started as a mathematician, deeply into the science of his day. He saw materialism rising, this idea that everything is just atoms bumping into other atoms.
Your thoughts, your feelings, everything.
Everything. And he respected the physics, but he felt it was missing something. Something fundamental about time and experience. So he tried to find this middle ground.
Between the materialists who say only matter exists and the idealists who say only the mind exists.
The classic cage match, yeah. One says the table's real, your mind is a chemical reaction. The other says your mind is real, the table's an illusion.
And Bergson comes in and says,
You're both wrong because you're both obsessed with static things. And this leads us to the first big hurdle in the book, the world of images.
right. This was the part I had to read twice. Bergson says matter, the whole universe, is an aggregate of images. Now, in 2026, I hear image, I think a JPEG or something I picture in my head. That is not what he means at all, is it?
Not at all. He's using it as a very specific technical term. Think of it like this. A realist says a table is a thing that exists without you. An idealist says it's a representation that exists because of you.
Okay.
Bergson says, let's just call it an image. It's something halfway between the two.
That kind of sounds like a semantic trick. What does halfway even mean?
It means the object has its own reality, color, shape. It's out there, but it isn't hidden from us. The universe is just this massive flow of images all acting on each other. Physics just happens. But, and this is the key, there's one image in all of this that's special.
The privileged image,
Yes.
your body.
And it's privileged because
I'm the one using it.
it's because of how you know it. You know every other image, the table, the tree, only from the outside, through perception. But you know your body from the outside, you can see your hand, and from the inside.
Affection, pain, effort.
Exactly. It's the one anchor point, the center of your
Okay,
universe.
my body's the anchor.
Yeah.
This brings us to that screen analogy from the article, which really helped me. We're just bombarded by this universe of images, right?
Yeah.
Light, sound, radio waves, everything.
Infinite data. If you actually perceived all of it, every atom, every vibration, you'd be paralyzed. You couldn't function.
So Bergson's big idea is that perception isn't about adding information to build a picture in your head.
No.
It's about subtracting.
Precisely. It's subtractive. Your body is a filter, a sieve. It blocks out 99.9% of the universe and only lets through what's relevant to your ability to act.
The example from the notes was the crowded street. You're walking to work, you've got a brick wall on your left, and a cyclist swerving toward you.
Right. Physically, the light from the Brex is hitting your retina just as much as the light from the cyclist. The data input is equal.
But I don't see the bricks. I mean, I sort of do, but I really see the cyclist. My perception just highlights them.
Because you can't do anything with the wall, it's irrelevant. The cyclist, on the other hand, requires you to jump.
Seeing is for doing.
That's the modern shorthand for it. Yeah. Your perception is not a photograph of reality. A photo captures everything equally. Your perception is what he calls a virtual action. You are literally carving out the parts of the universe your body can act upon.
So I'm not seeing the cup on my desk. I'm seeing my ability to pick up the cup.
Yes. You're seeing the outline of your own potential action, a sketch of what's possible.
Okay, that is a huge shift. So if that's perception, what is the brain actually doing? Because the model I learned is eyes take a picture, send it to the brain, brain plays a movie inside my skull.
And Bergson says that's completely backwards. Which brings us to the second pillar, the body as a center of action.
He used that telephone exchange analogy. It's so 19th century, but I think it works better than our computer analogy today.
It really does. Think of the brain like an old school switchboard operator. A signal comes in a sensation. The operator's only job is to plug that cord into an outgoing line of movement.
Stimulus in, switchboard, action out. That's it, no storage.
No hard drive. In a simple organism, like an amoeba, there's no switchboard. You poke it, it shrinks. The connection is direct.
But our brains are just these massive, complex switchboards.
Exactly. And that complexity creates a delay, a pause. This is what Bergson calls the zone of indetermination.
That sounds important.
It's the birthplace of freedom. When you see a red light, the signal comes in, but the energy doesn't just flow straight to a stomp on the brake reflex. It hovers. The switchboard has 100 possible connections it could make. You could stop, you could speed up, you could check your phone.
So that gap, that little hesitation between stimulus and response, that's what we call consciousness.
He argues that's exactly what it is. It's the measure of your available choice. An automaton doesn't need consciousness, it just needs reflexes. The brain is a machine for creating a delay, for creating choice.
There was a thought experiment that really nailed this for me. Bergson says, imagine you cut the afferent nerves, the sensory wires coming to the brain.
Right, the input lines.
Obviously, you stop perceiving things. Mm. The standard materialist says, see, you cut the wire to the projector, the movie stopped, the image was in the brain.
But Bergson has a totally different take. He says perception stops not because the internal screen broke,
but because the link to action is broken.
Yes. If your body can't touch or grasp or dodge the object anymore, that object ceases to exist for you. The virtual action becomes impossible, so the perception just vanishes.
It really takes the magic out of the brain and puts it all on the body's utility.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, this leads to the elephant in the room, memory.
The crux of the whole book and the hardest part.
Because if the brain is just a telephone exchange, a router for action, where are my memories? A switchboard doesn't record the calls. So where's the file for my first day of school?
This was the huge debate in the 1890s, and honestly, it still is. You had guys like Rebo saying memory is physical. It's like scratches on a vinyl record, residue on the neurons.
Which feels right. You damage the brain, you scratch the record, the memory's gone. Amnesia.
Bergson says no. Fundamentally no. He splits memory into two completely different types. First, there's what he calls habit memory.
Like muscle memory.
Essentially. Learning to type, riding a bike, reciting a poem you've memorized. He says this isn't really memory in the way we think of it. It's a motor mechanism.
You've just trained your body.
You've trained the switchboard. It is stored in the body, in the nerve pathways.
Okay, so the switchboard has speed dial. That makes sense.
Exactly. But then there's pure memory. This is the memory of a specific dated event. The Tuesday morning I learned to drive. It was raining. I wore a blue shirt.
You can't practice that. It just happened.
And Bergson says that memory is not in the brain. It's preserved in spirit. Or, if you want a more neutral term, in time itself.
Okay, hold on. If it's not in the brain, where is it? Is it just floating out there?
In a way, yes. He believes the past preserves itself automatically and completely. Everything that has ever happened to you is still there. But we can't access it all because most of it is useless for what we're doing right now.
Okay, this is the visual. The cone of memory. The Sage Mind article really focused on this.
Yeah, let's unpack it. Imagine an inverted cone.
Right, point down, base at the top.
That broad base is up in the clouds. That is the past. It contains every memory you have just sitting there, dormant.
Okay.
And the very sharp point of the cone is pointing down and just touching a flat plane. That plane is the present, reality.
So the point of the cone is my body, right here, right now, acting.
Correct. Now, remembering isn't looking at a file. It's a dynamic movement of this cone. The cone rotates.
Rotates.
It turns. So the relevant part of your past faces your current problem. If you need to remember a name, it turns toward your memories of people.
I see.
And then, this is the crucial part, it contracts. It squeezes that massive cloud of memory, filtering it, narrowing it down, until it fits into that tiny point of the present, into the motor diagram of your current action.
So if I'm trying to recognize a friend in a crowd, My cone is rotating to my memories of them, then contracting those memories down to fit what I'm seeing right now.
That's it, exactly. And the brain's job is not to store the memory. The brain's job is to act as a gatekeeper, to hold back the flood of the past so that only the useful memory gets through.
So a good memory isn't about having a big hard drive. It's about having a really good filter.
Yes. And this is his explanation for dreams and insanity. When you sleep, you stop trying to act on the world. The tension relaxes.
The point of the cone lifts off the plane.
Yeah. And the gatekeeper's off duty. The cone expands, the filter fails, and memories just rush in randomly, disconnected from any useful action. That's a dream.
And the article said this applies to things like aphasia, too. Forgetting words.
Right. A materialist says, see, the word storage part of the brain is damaged. Bergson says, no. The memory of the word is fine. It's safe in the past. What's broken is the motor mechanism, the antenna, that lets you insert that memory into your present speech.
The signal is fine. The receiver is broken.
Perfect summary. The brain is the insertion mechanism, not the filing cabinet.
This all leads to the most mind-bending part, which feels like a detour but is actually central. Zeno's paradox.
You can't do Bergson without Zeno.
Achilles and the tortoise. The fastest runner can never catch a turtle because he has to cross an infinite number of halfway points.
Logic says he never catches it. Reality says, of course he does.
So Zeno says reality is an illusion. Bergson says Zeno is just confused about what he's measuring.
Exactly. He says Zeno is making a category error. He's confusing space with time.
Which goes back to the map problem.
It does. You can take the path Achilles ran, that space, and you can divide it into infinite little pieces. It's a line. But the act of running, the movement itself, that's what Bergson calls duration.
A flow.
It's a flow. You can't cut a flow in half. The moment you stop it to measure it, it's not movement anymore.
It's like the melody analogy. You can cut the sheet music in half, that's space, but you can't cut the hearing of the song in half because each note just melts into the next.
Exactly. You kill the melody to analyze the note. You've destroyed the quality of the time to measure the quantity of the space.
So Zeno treated time like a line, but time is actually a river.
Precisely. And that's why this matters for the brain. We keep trying to map the brain like it's a static space. But consciousness is duration. It's a melody. The past is constantly gnawing into the future.
We're trying to catch the turtle by drawing lines, but the mind is the running itself.
You can't capture the running by looking at the footprints.
Wow, okay. That is a lot. Let's try to land this plane. We started with a Sage Mind article in AI. If we apply Bergson's model to, say, a large language model.
Yeah.
What do we see?
You see a massive base of the cone.
And a cube.
Unbelievably huge. These models have access to more past, more data than any human ever. They have the memory.
But do they have the point of the cone? The tip?
No. And that's the missing piece. An AI has no body. It has no vulnerability, no need to act to survive. It is all representation and zero action.
It's a hard drive without a user.
It's a mirror. It can reflect all of our data back at us, but it doesn't perceive because it has no reason to filter anything for survival. It lives in static spatial time, not in duration. It doesn't feel the flow because it has no needs.
It have no zone of indetermination, no choice.
It just computes. Bergson would say we're building bigger and bigger libraries, but we're not building a mind until we build something that needs to dodge a cyclist.
That's the takeaway. Consciousness isn't about knowing everything. It's about needing to survive something.
A very humbling thought for our tech overlords.
So here's a final thought to leave you with. Something that wasn't explicitly in the reading, but feels like the logical conclusion. If Bergson is right, and memory is preserved in the past, totally independent of the brain, what does that mean for death?
That is a heavy question.
If the brain is just the antenna, and the antenna breaks, does the signal just stop? Or does the cone just detach from the plane of reality and exist whole and complete in the past?
It implies we're building our own eternity moment by moment. The melody doesn't vanish just because the instrument got smashed.
So as you go about your day, pay attention to your filter. Are you actually seeing the world? Or are you just seeing your own to-do list painted on top of it?
Seeing is for doing. Maybe look up once in a while.
Thanks for diving deep with us. We'll see you in the next duration.